That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
One, I think it's okay to be angry and frustrated and mad about your situation or what's going on. But where I think people get in trouble is when they let those frustrations and that anger and that sadness overwhelm their hearts and their mind to the point where then they become blind to the blessings that they still do have in life.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Real Pod. I'm Victoria Garrick, former D1 athlete and mental health and body image advocate, and I'll be your host. We've got awesome guests, weekly inspiration, and are bringing you the realest conversations about everything and anything. Now let's get real. Welcome back to Real Pod. I hope you're having a great week. Honestly, thank you for deciding to listen to this podcast and also for choosing this particular episode, which I can assure you was a fantastic decision because we are being joined by someone who will certainly inspire you, move you, and remind you what it is to be truly grateful and to truly fight to see that silver lining no matter the challenge you're facing. On Real Pod today is Jake Olson. At 8 months old, Jake was diagnosed with retinoblastoma cancer and had to have his left eye removed. The doctors were able to save his right eye, fortunately. But then, after years of continuing to fight his cancer, stay healthy, and just lead a normal childhood life, Jake was 12 and that cancer was back. And this time so severe that the chemo and medicine could not treat it. And the doctors told him that he was going to have to have his right eye removed. So Jake completely lost all of his sight at the age of 12. But he continued to play the sport he loved, which was football. He continued to attack life with a determination and fire that this would not keep him from becoming his full potential and leading a great life. And Jake made it all the way onto the USC football team, put in 2 years of blood, sweat, tears to eventually actually be put into a real USC game as a long snapper, where he made a successful snap that aided USC's field goal and win of the game. And Jake is here today to talk about all of that, his journey, his story, how him and his family handled his cancer and everything he's been through, and the choices that Jake's made to be where he is today, strong and determined. And that, most importantly, what I learned from him, and you'll learn too, is that no matter the challenge, no matter the scenario, Jake is always making the choice that will move him forward. I hope that this episode touches you in the same way it did for me. Let's get to it. This is your first, no, not your first podcast. You've been on a few.
Oh, yeah.
We're a podcast guru over here. Have you ever thought of starting your own?
A little bit.
Too many things going on right
now. Yeah, it was pretty busy for a while. I mean, it's something that we actually started talking about this year. So, I mean, we'll see. Maybe in the next couple months. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel it. It's a grind, though. And you're building a business and you're speaking. You have all these things going on.
Yeah.
So just another thing on the plate.
Right, yeah. So,
but that means you've had many conversations with people, especially about your story. And honestly, as I was prepping to sit down and talk with you, which is an honor, not only just as a Trojan, by the way, but just as just knowing your story, which is so inspiring. I wanted to just kind of start off real blunt and just ask, that in all the conversations you have about your story, can you sense people who, are careful with their words or don't know how to ask you something?
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
I don't care. I mean, I tell people it's something that I think gets hyped up by society, but me personally, I don't really care. I think sometimes, especially in my case, when you're careful with what words you use, like a lot of people will say, visually impaired or whatever. But I mean, for me, that visually impaired has a totally different meaning than blind, you know, because obviously somebody who's visually impaired, I mean, that's a whole range of what possibly they could be seeing. I tell people I'm all fair game. I mean, I love giving people crap. I love taking crap. Like one of my favorite quotes is you can't take life too seriously or you'll never make it out alive. And so that's how I kind of live my life in the sense that, you know, I'm not going to let someone ruin my life or day because they said something that maybe was a little insensitive or something like that. Right. I mean, for all I know, they had no idea and it's fine. I mean, if I need to tell them, I tell them. If not, then oh well.
And you probably prefer when people just treat you normally.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is when most people meet me, it is kind of that careful, let's make sure he doesn't walk into anything, like, oh, let's hold his hand, like, da, 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 da. And then literally, 2 weeks later, just more times than not, they'll just turn around and start walking without me and then realize 10 steps in, like, oh, yeah, we're going this way. Like, you just completely forget.
Right. And you probably prefer that.
Yeah. It's the ultimate compliment, you know?
That's awesome. Well, I've obviously, from the mutual professors we've had and my friends on the football team, I've heard so much about you. And I'm just excited to sort of dive deeper into not only what your experience has been, but your approach to life, which is pretty phenomenal. And I think you have a lot of wisdom and inspiration to share people because here you are like absolutely dominating. And I think there's people in similar situations who maybe wouldn't have shown that same resilience.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to it. I love what you do too. So
oh, I mean, thanks.
It's be fun.
So I guess I just want to rewind and I'm sure you can't remember totally being 8 months old, but that was how old you were when unfortunately your parents found out that, you know, you were diagnosed with retinoblastoma. So what are your first memories of maybe being 1 or 2 years old, realizing your situation was maybe different than your sister's?
Yeah. I tell a story that one of my kind of very first realizations that I guess I was a little different was when I was leaving my kindergarten graduation early. And I remember my mom breaking down in the parking lot and she was crying. And I was like, Mom, why are you crying? And she's just like, this isn't fair. Like, you know, you shouldn't be having to do this. And I'm doing what? You know, like it was the second time the cancer came back. So we were going to go up to receive chemotherapy. And for me, didn't hit me that hard then. I just kind of realized, okay, like obviously the other kids aren't going up to the hospital and doing this. I think one of the cool things about being a child is that until you're told something is different, then you don't necessarily know it's different. I remember my twin sister being in the room when it's called the ocularis that do the prosthetic eyes, and they removed my left eye, obviously as a little kid. And so I was continuing to get more prostheses. And she was like, you know, Emma's sitting there like, when is my eye going to get taken out? And my mom's like,
she said that.
Yeah. And my mom's like, well, it doesn't really work like that. You know, not this time, you know, but so, you know, like funny. I think as kids, like you don't necessarily realize something's, I guess,
you're not
wrong.
Thinking of the long-term effect.
Right. And so, you know, eventually growing up, you start realizing, okay, I can't see as well in dark places or at nighttime. And, you know, I can't see on my left eye. But for me, it wasn't something that necessarily I knew was different. It just was how I grew up and how I lived my life.
Were people treating you different in first grade, second grade?
No. I mean, I wore glasses. So, I mean, I don't really remember being ever bullied about wearing glasses. But, you know, there's always, I guess, that stigma out there when growing up little that you're a nerd when you wear glasses or whatever. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, if anything, I love to mess with kids. I mean, it's kind of a cool, I guess, little fact that you can take out your eye. As a little kid, I remember, having old prostheses that, like, I would take. And I remember this one time, like, it must have been in fourth or fifth grade where I pretended I had one of my old eyes in my hand kind of, and I was covering it with my fist, and I like put it right up to my face. I was like, oh my gosh, it's coming out. And then I like I showed this kid like this eye I had in my hand while still covering my other one, my real eye, with my right hand. And he's like, oh my gosh. And I guess he went and threw up in the bathroom. So
oh my gosh. Yeah, this kid's like, I can wiggle my ears. You're like, well, I could take my eye out.
Yeah,
for you.
Right. So, you know,
So definitely things are, you're getting some of the jokes in there that they can't really make.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, the first, this is 12 years of your life. You have sight out of one eye. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, after fighting the cancer, you find out that it's come back now, and it's going to come at the cost of the only remaining eye you have. That conversation, was that something that at 12 was on your, at a, like a 10, 11, were you thinking there's a chance I lose this other eye, or are you fairly confident in the doctors and everything you've been through?
Yeah, I thought that we were pretty safe in the fact that we, you know, from my understanding, it was, I had to lose my left eye just because we had found the cancer so late as a baby. And so we let the cancer progress to the point in my left eye that we couldn't treat it. But the fact we were always treating my right eye and going and getting checkups, and when that cancer would return, we would treat it, that there wouldn't be a point that I was, you know, ever at jeopardy losing my right eye. Just we could continue to fight it. I mean, as many times as it would come back, but eventually, you know, I, as a little kid, I didn't realize, you know, there was a max on how much radiation one person could take, and mm-hmm. a max on how much chemo one person could take, you know, and the fact that when the cancer came back, you know, or would come back, that it, you know, for the, it would learn, you know, it'd become immune to some of these treatments we were using, and eventually just kind of came to the point where, like, okay, this thing is not going to go away, and we can't use the treatments. And I mean, we could try to hit it with stuff we know is not going to work, but all you're going to do is, you know, be rolling the dice on the fact of time when it's going to spread. So, you know, it was a shock in that aspect. It really was. It was something that I didn't want to hear, and mm-hmm. Never thought I would hear. And then once I did hear it, I mean, it just was very frustrating, obviously, in the fact that just like, okay, why, you know, we just fought so hard. Like, why now, after all this, did we come to the same, I guess, result as my left eye, you know, 12 years earlier?
Were your parents at this time, it's tough because they want to be the emotional example for you of maybe keeping it positive of, well, you can handle this, you could face this, you're still going to live a great life, but then also dealing with the fact that they want what's best for you and they wanted you to fight this as well. And what was the sort of communication like within your family as everyone was realizing this?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, obviously my parents were heartbroken. I mean, I think in a sense it was harder for them because as a child, or as their child, I mean, I don't have kids. I can't imagine, but you want what's best for them, and you want to protect them and you want them to be safe. And I bet they felt way out of control. And mm-hmm. for me, it was, yeah, this is out of control, but at the same time, it was my body, it was my mind, it was still my ability, and in my possibility, you know, in my power to get past this. And for them, it was, you know, I don't know how this kid's going to react. You know, he's a strong kid, but this is, you know, obviously really devastating. You know, I'm sure flashes went through their mind of what this is going to do to my soul. And so for them, I definitely think it was tougher, but you know, they were there for me. They loved me. They were strong for me. They, you know, continually put in my ear that I could get through this, that we were going to get through this. And, you know, they kept supporting me and just, even after losing my eyesight, the things I wanted to do, they believed in me. You know, they, were there for me at every step, which, you know, obviously went a long way. You know, they obviously, I kind of, you don't treat a kid normal and they're like, oh, just treat him normal. I mean, there's obviously certain things you got to take in consideration now, you know, but what I tell people is, you know, if your kid has a passion, you find a way for them to pursue that passion, because that's what's going to make them happy in life.
And before you had that second eye surgery, you were already playing football. You were already golfing. Mm-hmm. You already had these passions.
Right.
And that's from a very young age. Like, you were falling in love with these sports. Yes. Correct. Middle school, high school.
Yes. Yep. And played through, you know, the treatment, and sometimes my eyesight would be better than others. But yeah, absolutely love sports. Tried almost all of them. But really obviously had a passion for golf and football. And was something that, you know, was a very scary thought when going through this, was how am I going to continue to play these sports that take up so much of my time and that I love playing so much.
How long until finding out about this, the removal of the right eye and that surgery happening, what was the time frame in between those two dates?
It was a month and a half.
A month and a half. Yeah. And that was just the doctor saying, this is the most time we could give you before we would be concerned.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I think they were just wanting to see, I guess. We did some localized treatments. Again, they were 99.9% sure it wouldn't affect the cancer, but we did them anyways. And we just wanted to see how the cancer responded. And, you know, obviously it didn't do anything. But yeah, eventually just was kind of okay. You know what, let's just set a date. Because again, I mean, the further you push it back, I mean, again, you're only increasing the odds of it spreading. So
as a 12-year-old, how are you processing the fact that like this is the last 5-6 weeks that I'm going to be able to see?
Yeah, it was a tormenting thought, that's for sure. I mean, it was something that was on my mind constantly.
Were you going to therapy?
I was not, no.
Okay. That's wow. I mean, emotionally to handle that.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, you know, my therapy was, I mean, going to USC.
Right.
It really was. I mean, being part of that football team, being inside, you know, USC and, you know, I mean, at the practice field and, you know, Howard Jones and stuff, it was kind of a safe haven of just forgetting what was going on the outside and just being able to be with these guys that I loved and were my heroes. And so, you know, that absolutely, really boosted my spirits. I did a couple of cool things. You know, I played Pebble Beach actually this summer before finding this out.
Gorgeous course.
Yeah. So I wanted to go play it one more time, because just, I wanted to see it and, you know, it was awesome. You know, I got to sit courtside at a Lakers game, which was awesome. So, you know,
I remember an interview, Pete Carroll said, we want Jake to see everything he wants to see.
Yeah.
And they brought you to a practice. They brought you to the locker room.
I mean, I
growing up a huge fan. And
I became a full fledged member of that team. It was really fun. And, so, you know, that definitely helped, but no, I mean, one of the things that I think weighed so heavily on me was that thought. And it wasn't until really going blind that coming home, you know, from that the hospital, realizing that burden was on me, and you know, it kind of almost felt like a relief, even though I was blind now, and that wasn't, you know, obviously the best thing I could ever imagine, but there was that sense of like, okay, this is final, like this is what's happened. There's no more waiting, there's no more, you know, 24 hours, 10 minutes, whatever. It happened, and so now it's time to move on. But absolutely, for those 6 weeks, yeah, There was a lot of things to think about.
Sounds pretty, I don't know what the word is for like a 12-year-old to just, like you just said, have that mindset of just got to accept this situation and figure out what's best. And did that come quickly to you, or you're throughout middle school, were there like those hard nights where you're crying, or where you can't see this thing you're used to seeing and it's frustrating for you?
No, I mean, I guess I'll answer the first question in the sense that I was a 12-year-old, and I say this, that was battle-tested. I mean, I really was battle-tested. I faced cancer for 12 years. I came back 8 times. I mean, it was just this constant, I guess, disappointment. And when it comes back, what are we going to do? What are we going to face it with? Okay, let's face it. I mean, there was a lot of struggle in that. You know, it wasn't easy. And so by the time that this came around, like, yes, it was the most devastating news. Yes, it was the hardest battle I was going to have to face. But, you know, it doesn't mean you lose the strategy and the mindset that you had basically used your entire life to get through, you know, those other challenges. And so I think it had been kind of developing me. I think, you know, I had developed that strength and that positive attitude and that courage to continue to push on. So it was a little bit natural. To answer your second question, yeah, there was definitely times where it's sad and angry and frustrating. And yeah, I mean, of course, those times come, and they still do come. You know, my situation hasn't changed, right? But, you know, I tell people when I speak, you know, I think it's okay to have those feelings. One, I think it's okay to be angry and frustrated and mad about your situation or what's going on. But where I think people get in trouble is when they let those frustrations and that anger and that sadness overwhelm their hearts and their mind to the point where then they become blind to the blessings that they still do have in life. And wow. And that's the thing that I learned is that, yeah, I could get frustrated about not seeing. I could get mad about not seeing. And there's times where I do, and there's times where I feel left out. And those are in those times. And sure, there's times I cry. But it is in those moments that I let myself feel that. But I also remind myself of how blessed I am, all the things I still do have. And I don't let myself go down that wormhole of just how everything sucks. Because the fact is, yes, I don't have my eyesight, but I think it'd be shameful for me to focus and be angry and mad about the one thing I don't have, which is my eyesight every day of my life.
Wow. I'm just, that was incredibly inspiring. I'm like, just feeling like what do you think? How do you tolerate people who experience something in their life that they consider is difficult or challenging, and then they essentially like piss it all away. Like they're like, screw this. Like I'm a bit.
Well, I get frustrated.
Like how do you, and so many people approach life that way.
No, I think it's a balance of having sympathy, but also, you know, I do get frustrated because for me, it's like, you know what? You do have so much potential. Like you still have an ability inside yourself to go live a fulfilling life and a purposeful life. You know, like don't let this one set of circumstances dictate your entire potential in life. And so, yeah, you know, I definitely get frustrated, but you know, I think I try to live my life to show people that, you know, it absolutely, you can do the same thing I have done. You know, I have no superpowers. I have no, special gift. You know, it's just something that you have to take upon yourself. And again, you know, there's a time for everything. There really is. There's a time to be sad and there's a time to focus on what's gone wrong and lament. But I mean, there's also a time where you have to pick yourself up and say, okay, you know, this has happened. I respect this is what's happened. This is not what I want to happen, but it did happen. So how am I going to continue to live life? Because life is going to go on. People are going to go on and you got to go on.
Do you think that that comes down to a choice that every single person has?
I absolutely think it's a choice that every single person has.
To choose to see a silver lining, choose to see the other blessings that they have and the other potential they
have. It's the first thing you know, after telling my story, it's the first thing I hit on my speeches. I say at the end of the day, it was a choice for me to come home in that hospital day and choose to continue to move on. And Coach Baxter at SC, it's not his quote, but he always said it. And the first choice in anything is how you view a situation. And he says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And it's choosing to change the way you look at things. You know, it's choosing to see problems as opportunities and seeing that, yes, going blind is a problem. It opens up a world full of problems. How are you going to read and write? You got to learn Braille. How are you going to get around? You got to use a cane. How are you going to do this, that, whatever? And those are problems, but they're also opportunities to learn, to use your other senses, to grow, to, you know, grow your network, to meet people, to be in these situations, like the fact that I was able to go to USC at the age of 12 and have that experience that led me to one day playing for USC and inspiring millions. I mean, you know, that after my first snap, I told a reporter, you know, if you can't see how God works things out, I think you're the blind one. And I meant that in the sense that, you know, if you really can't see that through all of this, everything that's happened to me, that all this came together for, you know, this moment and for where my life's heading, that I do think you're the blind one, because it's obvious. I mean, it's obvious what I went through, the problems I went through presented these opportunities for me to be here today.
Wow. And I also think along with that and these blessings that you receive, something I'm curious to learn more your take on this is the relationships that you have in your life. I mean, not even with Quebec, but with all of your friends and the people in your life, like you, I mean, I would imagine every single relationship you have is deep and meaningful. I mean, you are hearing someone's heart. You are, it's action. It's how that's being built, and especially trust. I mean, you have to trust every single person in your life. I watched the video of, was it Wyatt who ran you out?
Yeah.
Wyatt, great guy. But you just running. I mean, if Max told me to go down the street, close my eyes and run straight, and he was like, trust me, I would be like, never, Max. You're trying to like do something to me.
Yes.
But you have to trust everyone. And is that something that you had to work on? Was that trusting yourself or just everyone in your life? You have to have that some sort of...
I mean, I get, you know, it's funny because when people do, you know, pretend like there'll be a couple of times, and I mean, obviously, I know I'm hanging on to someone, so it's usually not just me guiding them, because obviously they probably would be scared in a sense. But like if I'm hanging on to someone's shoulder and someone's like, okay, let's make like a train. So like they're hanging on my shoulder and they close their eyes. I mean, they can't do it for more than 10 seconds. They just start freaking out. And just like, so yeah, I guess it is a level of trust. But no, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, trust and that support and that love, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And it goes in every aspect of my life. I mean, I depend on people to, you know, I depend on my teachers growing up to figure out a new way I can learn math and learn, you know, school. And when it comes down to football, yeah, it was up to Wyatt and having that trust with him that, you know, beyond just guiding me out there, I mean, it was how is he going to line up my hips, you know, is just having that connection and the communication of, okay, you know, I'm lined up correctly. Now we can successfully do the snap. And so there was a lot to it. But I don't know, it's something you build, right? Trust is something you build, and it builds, I think, quicker when you need it. but
you have no choice but trusting.
Right,
yeah.
But I think it definitely is something you build.
And one of my favorite relationships in your life that I see all the time on Instagram is obviously Quebec.
Yes.
And in getting a guide dog, was this when you were 12, 13? And did you choose Quebec?
Yeah, so I got Quebec when I was like 14 years old. And it was like one of the youngest to ever get one. They usually don't get them that young. But I guess they figured I was mature enough or something. So they allowed me to get Quebec. But he's been amazing. He's gone through high school and college with me. But talk about trust. I remember the first time I ever walked with Quebec alone, the first couple of days, you just spend time with them and kind of learn in the building what to do and stuff. And finally, after a couple of days, they put you out there on this course that's really regulated. There's a bunch of people kind of stationed silently watching to make sure you don't screw with something up too much. But but you're in your own little bubble there, you're alone. You know, there's no one behind you telling you what to do. And they give you this little path.
You're just trusting the dog.
They give you this little path you have to take. You know, through a little down, it's in San Rafael, California, so it's not a big city, but it's through a city, you know, crossing streets and stuff. And I remember we crossed the first street, everything was going fine. We get to the other side perfectly, crossed at the right time. He stopped at the curb, which is amazing. I told him, good boy, stepped up and just whacked my head against a pole.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
And, like, I was just like, I was like, Quebec, like, really?
Could you tell that you were, like, in pain?
Do they dogs wince? Yawn when they're stressed.
Oh.
You know, they yawn when they're tired, but they yawn when they're stressed. And so, yeah, he was sitting there yawning. And I was like, dude, like, come on, man. Like, really? But, no, I mean, he's been a perfect angel ever since. So.
And you guys spend every second together. Correct?
Almost,
he
yeah.
sleeps with you. When would you not be with Quebec?
Frat parties.
Quebec doesn't make the cut for those. I feel like he'd be a hit at the 9-0.
It's
like Chick Magnet right
he
there.
Would not. He does not enjoy that loud music and
right.
the chaos of it. But
so on that sort of night, are you you're choosing a friend that you trust at school?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much just go out with friends. A few times, I guess I went out somewhat by myself, I guess. I mean, yeah. Like meet people there and stuff, but yeah.
And then come back home to the, and Quebec's like, how we do. He's checking you, yeah, making
pretty,
sure
pretty
you're
much.
Everyone's
pretty
good.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that's incredible. And my best friend, Aubrey, actually, they grew up when you could have seeing eye dogs at, they would breed them.
Yeah, yeah. She lives almost right by their campus up there.
Yeah,
so.
And she has, so I love them. It's really special how a dog can develop that relationship with a human. I mean, personally my favorite animals.
Yeah.
I think cats are cute, but
yes.
I could never cross over that side.
No, me either. I mean, it is a very special thing, and you know, they're your best friends. I mean, they're your companions. Mm-hmm. They're very loyal, and it's something that definitely is a great way to. I don't know how Quebec loves me and is loyal to me, and you know, you try to get that in other relationships. Something my pastor, I remember, once told me, because especially in Quebec's earlier days, like literally if you took him away, he would like just bark and try to get back to me and like freak out. He still does that somewhat today, but he just has separation anxiety. So anyways, I remember this one time I was up on stage practicing a speech, kind of right when I was first doing this, and he was down there and he was barking at me, wanting to get out to me. And my pastor, he's like, you know, once he goes, look at that. If you ever find a woman that does that, keep her.
Well, I bet that's a good tell. If you're dating someone, you bring someone home, does Quebec like her?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because that's...
It's the ultimate test.
Yeah, that's true. And practically graduated USC with you as well. I mean, throughout your whole college experience, probably knew the campus. Do you guys end up together learning the map of where you're walking from place
to
place?
Yeah, you do. You know, you try to get kind of the map in your head and know what it's kind of like. And then, yeah. And Quebec is a very smart... One of his best qualities is the ability to kind of... If I went to a certain building, you know, next time I'm walking by that building, he kind of almost sometimes will go there, you know, I'll kind of remind him, like, no, we're not going to class right now. But he's, like, very smart in the fact, okay, it's morning time, we're walking this route, we're probably going to this class.
Probably going a little Galen, get a smoothie.
Yeah, probably, yep.
And that's something I want to dive into, too, is, I mean, you were a student-athlete, and being a student-athlete is tough. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not... an easy lifestyle. It's not an easy hours at all. And especially having to have a seeing eye dog help you through this process must have been an experience unlike the ones that your fellow teammates could relate to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple of differences, I guess. I mean, you know, I can't ride a bike or a skateboard around.
Right.
So there'd be times where meetings would start at 2:15. I'd get out of class at 1:50. I'm across campus and you're trying to book it, but you know, I don't know. I mean, you can ask Max. It would take balls for any coach to say something, I guess, walking in a minute late. I mean, but and there's times where it gets a little stressful, or, you know, I have extra tutoring, you know, just because, you know, I can't see the paper or something like that, right? But
something I've learned from just hearing your past interviews is that you don't want to be treated differently or extended a hand unless you ask for that hand.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important to absolutely kind of respect someone's, you know, make sure they're all good, but, you know, let them kind of come and reach and ask for the help that they need. And so, you know, that's what I did. You know, if I needed help within class, I was going to get help for the class, but, you know, I didn't need to be, you know, baby through every class. You know, there's certain classes I was completely fine just by myself.
Right. And then also just with football practice and lifting, and then eventually getting to go into that first game. What was going, did you know on the sidelines that that was the game that you were maybe going to go?
Yeah. In? Yeah. Helton had told me kind of that week that we pretty much was all set up, and he confirmed it Friday. So yeah, absolutely. And so I was ready to go. And it was a little nerve wracking. I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure you can relate, but it's more nerve-wracking thinking about it.
Right.
I mean, once you have that ball in your hand, you're kind of like, okay, you know, like, I've done this so many times. Like,
it all comes down to literally one touch.
Yeah, right. And it's just kind of, you know, let's do something you've done thousands of times. But yeah, I mean, it was incredible. It was just a very happy feeling going out there. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of nerves once I was out there. Just this, like, overjoyed feeling of just,
couldn't have gone better, to be honest.
Yeah, well, just, I mean, like I said, I mean, to be honest, it was just, I worked so hard to get there, and, you know, everything has happened, everyone's kind of there. I mean, it was almost like, who cares what actually happens? Like, just the fact we're here, this is amazing within itself. So.
And speaking of, you just said the thoughts are almost, like, more crippling than the actual act of doing it physically. Mm-hmm. That was a question I had for you, is I find sometimes, you know, my thoughts, my anxieties, they can run wild, and then in your situation, I would imagine there's not a visual thing that could distract you momentarily. Yeah. It's just you and what you're thinking.
Yeah.
How have you navigated that voice?
You know, I talk to myself sometimes, especially in my head. You know, you just got to lock yourself in and tell yourself you can do it. You've done it plenty of times, not to overthink it, you know, remind yourself just of the simplicity of it. And, I mean, a lot of times it's just really talking to yourself and really having that conversation and focusing on, like I said, all the things that you've done to be ready for this moment. And then also just reminding yourself too. I mean, I think it might've been Coach McKay. I forget if it was or not, but, back in the day, USC had a bad loss. And afterwards, you know, the press was kind of getting after him. He goes, you know, the point is there's a billion people over in Asia that didn't watch this game and don't care about this game.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing to think about is like, you know, this is obviously it means more because you were the one who put in so much time. You were the one who put in so much work, and this is everything you've worked up for. But at the end of the day, you know, it is, you know, what really matters. I mean, you know, it's a lesson that, you know, you reflect even a couple weeks ago when Kobe Bryant died. You know, it's kind of like, you know, all that time winning those national championships, I mean, or not national, but the championships, I mean, it's, you know, it's special, and I'm sure he loves having those memories, and he's proud of what he did, but, you know, at the end of the day, I bet the only thing he really cared about was the fact that the time he got to spend with his family, and, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that he spent with his loved ones, and, you know, and that's what, I mean, I really think that's what's really important, is just, you know, showing love, feeling love from your loved ones. And I think at the end of the day, you can psych yourself up for all these additional things that matter in the moment. But at the end of the day, when you're, you know, when all of a sudden it's done, you're looking back on it. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I look back on college, I mean, champion and being on the football team was an amazing experience. It's something I'll always treasure. But making the relationships with, you know, my manager, my other best friends, and just having those kind of moments with my teammates off the field, I mean, that's what I'm really going to care about.
Where do you credit this perspective you have? Because I would have to imagine you learn that from a mentor, or you have a situation in your life where you realize, okay, this isn't work. Like, I have to make this the positive choice we were talking about. Was that something like innate in you? Like, you feel destined for,
you know, I don't know. I think, I think going through a lot of serious stuff when I was a kid, and you know, obviously going through what I went through at the age of 12, you know, I think it kind of enlightened me just to how precious life is, and what are the real things that matter in life. You know, I think that you know, you have a lot of stresses, and again, I don't mean to like ever demean someone's stress of getting an A on the test or stuff like that. I mean, that obviously matters, you know, things matter in life. You don't want to be this,
right,
this hippie, like, oh man, nothing matters.
I think
love.
They matter.
You know, but like, but there is, so there's a level of still being driven and wanting to exceed in everything you do and putting your best foot forward. But when it doesn't go well, and inevitably when you do make a mistake or when you fail or when things get hard, it is a fallback just to remind yourself, hey, you know, this is important, but like, you know, it's not, this doesn't define me. This doesn't, you know, I don't value myself on the fact that I have an A or B on this paper. You know, like I value myself because my friends love me, my parents love me, and you know, my boyfriend, girlfriend loves me, and you know, other people are there and they are wishing me on and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think, you know, a lot of people kind of get confused in life, is when they put their worth and their value on things that, you know, aren't, either one, don't care about them, or two, you know, don't actually reflect what their actual value is.
Yeah. And it's so enticing these days, especially with social media, mm-hmm. and with achievement and the stress and pressure on, yep. on these certain things that, I mean, there's almost no focus on all the things, the important things you mentioned, right? Like the your process or your family life or your relationships or your character. It yeah. seems that everything that's being valued outwardly is the letter grade, the stats on the sheet, the like count.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, and I've lost sight of that too, just in my own life.
We all do. I mean, it's a very enticing, it's a wormhole that we all get lost in. I mean, I get lost in that too. I mean, you check how many likes you get and stuff, and like, you know, why didn't this do well? Like, do people not like that? Whatever. And it's kind of like, you know, you know, you look at other cultures, and there's so many things that are like, oh, this other culture's happy because X, Y, or Z. And it's like, look at the cultures that focus on family and friendship, you know, like, and you see a lot of happiness in those, just because, I mean, that's again, at the end of the day, not to say other things aren't important, but at the end of the day, the most important thing is that. I mean, it really is. It's, we say in football, faith, family, football. I mean, that's what Coach Helen thing is. And that's true. I mean, football is third. It's faith, family, football.
Yeah. And being someone who did have sight for the first period of their life and then lost that sight, how that, those illustrations, those images that you still have, those memories, are they still vivid for you? Or is that something that you hold on to dearly? Like when yeah. you touch the football and you can imagine what it looks like?
Yeah. If I want to, I mean, to be honest, I would have thought I would have done that a lot more. When I was, you know, thinking about going blind, it's like, okay, this is something I'm going to really want to see. And always be focused on what I could be seeing and try to picture in my mind. And I think a lot of times I even forget to do that. I mean, there's so much going on, conversations, feelings, what I'm hearing. There's so much else going on. Literally over half the time, I don't even think twice that I can't see, or if I could see, what would I be seeing?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I could just be me, I guess. But
yeah,
I found that interesting after going blind. It's like, huh. I guess I really like don't
like
care
all this, like the sort of things, the stereotypes, the preconceived notions you had, like you're not really thinking about. Actually, I think you said on, I think it was Gervais' podcast, you said something about, I don't even try to imagine like what people look like. And that would be something that I would think, oh, when you meet someone, you see in like the Ray Charles movie, he's like touching someone's face.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that's like the, yeah, the thing they portray for people who are
right.
blind. But you said you don't even try to imagine people look like.
No, because I think, I mean, like, to be honest, like, what does it really matter? You know,
right.
Like what's going to change in this conversation if I knew exactly what you look like, you know,
right.
nothing. So, you know, I think for the most part, I really don't care unless obviously it's, you know, it's, we're out in the frat party. Then you might, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We keep coming back to the frat party.
Then you might want to know what someone looks like.
We gotta
like,
get
know?
Back to the atrium. Were you in a fraternity or just, you were just the
no.
token they let you into all the parties?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did. I did. But no, it's pretty much just show up.
I'm laughing. That's hilarious. I know the feeling. You know, you go, you want to make sure you're looking cute. You never know who you're going to see.
Exactly.
And they think USC is a big school, but I think depending on, like, at least the athletic circles feel small.
It is.
I feel like I knew everyone at the athletic circles.
No, SC is a smaller school than you would imagine, and that's for sure.
Yeah. And we came in the same class. I'm surprised. I mean, I remember living like right by like Jaden, Christian Rector, Isaiah. Who are you living with that I didn't?
Was that your senior year?
No, that was my freshman year.
Oh, your freshman year?
I remember living in.
So I lived in Floor my freshman year. And then
I was in Webb Tower.
Okay. So then I lived
they
Webb.
They stuck us in Webb. Sorry.
No, you're good. I lived in Webb my sophomore and junior year.
Okay.
And then I pulled some strings and got the Village my senior year.
That's so nice. Yeah. That's the prime place to live.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And I mean, there's also something about said about being a senior and your RAs are sophomores.
No. You're like, please don't check in on me. I don't want you to. I can light a candle if I want. Okay, I'm 22.
No, they knew just to leave us alone.
So. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time. I guess the last few questions I just want to ask are, I mean, looking into 2020, looking into a new year, I mean, what's your plan of attack? And I mean, we're both in this situation, fresh out of school, pursuing passions and dreams.
Yeah. You know, a passion of mine is obviously, you know, I think God's been giving this opportunity for a long time and he's continuing to give me it, just sharing my story, impacting people's lives. And I can do that in every possible way, if it's through Victoria Garrick's podcast, a Real Pod, or it's you know, speaking around the country or whatever. You know, it's an honor to be doing that and a privilege to share my story. So I imagine I'll continue to do that. I started a business, which is really cool. So kind of going down the entrepreneurship path, which awesome. which is really cool. Continue to play golf, you know, and
I know you're killing it. I mean, you were hanging out with T Woods this morning.
Yeah, it was awesome. So always loved golf, and then. You know, I really did find a love for the weight room in college and lifting and just being kind of the whole fitness thing. And so, you know, I don't know what kind of lies down there in my future, but might be interesting to kind of maybe go for my to be personal trainer one day or something like that.
Cool.
Kind of mix in the whole mentality side with the actual physical side of it. You know, I think that'd be cool.
I mean, limitless possibility.
Yeah.
And then also on this idea of you traveling and telling your story and speaking, and that's something I can relate to. What is it like for you to revisit your story so frequently? I mean, do you ever just wish you could sit down with someone? I mean, I feel I'm basically shaming myself right now, but do you ever wish you could just sit down with someone and like this would never come up? Or I bet that's how it is with all your friends and family. But then when you get to media, maybe it's different.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's awesome because you get to see someone's reaction, right? And you get to see firsthand, like literally what's coming out of my mouth is impacting this person.
Right.
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's where, you know, with my friends, you know, trust me, with my friends, we're not sitting down talking about this. Except I'd say, you know, with all the events happening at USC, that is what I get sick of talking about. You know, I have no idea what's going on at USC. I don't know what the president's doing. I don't know what the AD is doing. I have no idea what the football's like. I'm just as much in the dark / have no power and authority over any decisions being made as you do. I have my opinions, but like, it's just, I can't help you.
I just want to blink and be maybe like 5 years in the future. Know, and then hopefully we're smooth sailing or back to normal. I mean, the volleyball program doesn't even have a coach right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and it's weird too, when you become alum and you want, I mean, it's like, for example, you remember the USC you visited when Pete Carroll was a coach, mm-hmm. and all this rah-rah amazing stuff. And now, I mean, just a lot of change at USC.
Yeah, it's a ton of change. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, that's mostly what I get annoyed with people talking about all the time.
You're like, I don't want to talk about USC football anymore. No, I feel you. Trust me, I feel you. Right, Max? We only talk about it.
Yeah, we all want answers, but
yeah,
we're not going to get any of that. I'm certain of that.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your time today, and it's been great chatting with you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Real Pod. If you want to keep up with Jake, his Instagram is at JakeOlson61. It's incredible to keep up with him and see all the amazing things he's doing. He's winning golf championships now. He's basically taking over the world. So big thank you to Jake for taking the time to sit down with us today and share a bit of his story and his journey with us. Make sure you follow him at JakeOlson61. And also, thank you for listening to Real Pod. I really appreciate it. You can follow us too at Real Pod on Instagram. Instagram. Make sure you subscribe so that you're the first to listen every Wednesday. You never miss an episode. And also rate and review this podcast. I would really appreciate that. You guys are everything to me. You keep me speaking into the mic by myself every week. So thank you. I appreciate it. And I will see you guys with another guest next week. Have a great one.